need a three. Sexton works on Irving, trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down. Osmond steps into a long-distance jumper. Allen to the bucket. He crushes it home.
Off to Garland for three. He knocks it down.
Drummond toward Valanciunas. Finds a cutter in Okoro, and Okoro thunders it home.
By Kyrie. Sexton got it back. Nance for the tie. He knocks it down. Love hands it off the Sexton feed. By seven.
And Cleveland, this is for you.
Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs, joined as always by Evan Damrell, but we have a special guest today, our friend of the program, Ben Axelrod from WKYC, here to talk the trade deadline. And Ben, let's just start with the only trade the Cavs made. Get JaVale McGee trade JaVale McGee to the Denver Nuggets. 2 second-round picks and center Isaiah Hartenstein coming back from Denver in this deal. What did you make of Hartenstein and this deal in return for JaVale? Were you pro-trading JaVale?
Yeah, you know, I was pro-trading JaVale just because I think you look at him, he's 33 years old. He doesn't really fit in with the timeline of this team. You look at, obviously, having Jared Allen as your starting center. I think, you know, if you can trade a backup center who's, you know, I know he's good in the locker room. He's been good for this team in general, but you trade your backup center, you know, a guy who's not a long-term piece for this team. You get back 2 second-round, even if they're protected second-round picks, you're building up that war chest. You're building up your trade assets. And then you get a backup center back too, because I think that was another one of the concerns with trading JaVale is you're losing your backup center. Well, now you have a backup center coming back here. You know, no significant money tied up to him. He has a player option for next year for less than $2 million, a restricted free agent after that. So you can kind of play out the string with that. But yeah, I mean, you know, when you were getting JaVale, it was really to get the draft pick attached to him. So then to be able to turn around and flip him, I personally think it was a no-brainer.
Evan, where are you at on this?
Oh, I'm on the same page as Ben, and I think you are too, Chris. It's just,
oh yeah,
flipping JaVale McGee, well, first off, getting a second-round pick for the trouble of taking on his $4 million so the Lakers can sign Marc Gasol. Great. I'm okay with that. I'm like, yeah, this is a good trade. The Cavs are kind of restocking the cupboard after giving up 4 second-round picks and cash for Kevin Porter Jr. But to get – I know the one pick is protected, but an unprotected second and then a protected – an additional protected second along with a young center that the Cavs can kind of take a stab at, this is a pretty good trade for Cleveland. Like, I think him going to JaVale is doing – or, sorry, not going to JaVale. Going to Denver is doing right by JaVale. He gets to play for a contender. Like, Denver made a lot of moves today. I think they smelled the blood in the water with LeBron being out 4 to 6 weeks and Anthony Davis's calf kind of being a time bomb because you have to tread lightly with that. I think the Nuggets really went all in to try and make some moves to – come out of the West and maybe make some noise against whether it's Brooklyn or Milwaukee, and I respect it. And I think adding JaVale McGee is a much added depth. Like, it's clear the Nuggets are good this year, but they do miss Jeremy Grant. They do miss is it Mason or Miles Plumlee, one of the two, but the Plumlee brother. And just at this point, JaVale McGee's cheap. He's making $4 million. You give up 2 seconds, which I know people say that doesn't translate to much, but I have a point about that in a second. But Hartenstein wasn't playing for them. He's playing 9 minutes a game for the Nuggets and hardly playing in general for them either, because, you know, they're a contender and you don't really have room for a 22-year-old to really try and grow and develop while you're trying to win a championship at the same time. It's just weird how that works out. So yeah, I like this trade overall, and I'm interested to see how Hartenstein works out. I think it could be a sneaky good play for the Cavs.
So here's the thing on this that I think is just very obvious to me, that I think I understand if you're a fan and you get frustrated and you're like, okay, I would just like to see my team be more competent, and like JaVale's fun and all kinds of stuff, like, they, you know, whatever, I get that. But, and like, I don't know if this 2023 second round pick that's top 46 protected, I think, and then the 2027 unprotected pick are going to amount to anything. They might not, you know. And I'm not going to say, like, let's go find the second round draft prospect for 2027, because that would be like a 14-year-old, and that'd be weird. But like, you think about what you're doing here for Cleveland. You're still building out this runway. Like, you're not in a position like Denver or like in Cleveland itself, like the Browns, who like do these little moves on the edges where like this little bit piece really could help you actually compete for a title. You should be still trying to build out yourself, get recoup value. And look, like, I think especially in a world if you're trying to get a pick back for Drummond and like you weren't going to get that, you recoup that and more just by having JaVale on your team for a couple months.
Well, I think this is
you play the value game right.
I think this is classic like process over results almost. Is, you know, you look at JaVale McGee and You know, I think when we first saw the Cavs were trading for him, everybody, you know, you kind of scratch your head and say, JaVale McGee doesn't really fit in with this team. He doesn't fit in with this timeline. But you get a second round pick, you know, back with him from the Lakers. You trade him then for 2 second round picks. I mean, you turned, you know, basically a 3 month rental of JaVale McGee into 3 second round picks, right? Like, I think, and even if these second round picks don't amount to anything, like, that's just something worth taking a flyer on. That's something that, you know, doesn't really do any harm to your team. Actually, for all intents and purposes, he seemed to be a good presence for the Cavs and a locker room leader and all that good stuff. But I just think this is like good process, even if it doesn't necessarily result in anything tangible down the line.
Yeah, no, and I agree with that. And Alphonso McKinney, and let's just like really look back here. Alphonso McKinney and Jordan Bell, who the Cavs traded to get JaVale, were on non-guaranteed contracts. I know McKinney stuck with the Lakers, but Jordan Bell is waived right away. So essentially, the Cavs gave up, like you said, half a season. They gave up nothing to get half a season of JaVale McGee, and they got 3 second-round picks for their trouble. Like, this is a huge win. And they get a young center to kind of take a stab at, too, which I think maybe Chris wants to talk about a bit. I'm not sure.
Well, let me just ask you guys this. This is kind of my last point on this. So Hartenstein is 22, as Ben mentioned, $1.9 million player option for next year. Cleveland was interested in him before he signed with Denver. He was with Houston before this. Was put up some really big numbers for Rio Grande in the G League for Houston's G League affiliate. And then was with Denver, and as Evan mentioned, hasn't really played much. But you're in a position with him now where it's like, okay, you get a guy that can come in, probably just eat up some of these minutes that JaVale was going to play. And I just think, like, even if he is not on the team next year, or even if he's on the team one more year and it doesn't matter, like, I'm more interested in him considering he's had a little bit of NBA success and has had higher levels of G League success than Marquise Bolden, than some of the other names you could have gotten off the free agent market, right? Like, I think if you're going to have someone eat up center minutes for the rest of the season, a 22-year-old who put up big G League numbers and, like, talking to some Nuggets folks, like, moves really well and plays hard and does foul a lot but is, like, engaged on the court, I can roll with that. And I think that's that. If that's a little talent bet you're making, and I think now where Cleveland is at, talent matter on the edge of the roster, trying to develop it is going to matter more than ever in terms of actually building something worthwhile. See what you get. Doesn't work, it doesn't cost you very much. It's like, okay, you have to pay him $2 million next year. That's a blip on the checkbook.
Yeah, I would rather have somebody playing these minutes who's auditioning for something rather than somebody who's just playing because you need the body, because you need somebody to play those minutes. So I mean, I'm not expecting much personally. Like, I think you just look at his NBA track record over the course of 3 seasons and just like, you know, by now you'd want to see a little bit more, but he certainly has higher upside than some of the names you mentioned. He fits in more with this team's timeline than JaVale McGee does. So, yeah, I just think in terms of, you know, now at this point in the season, now heading down into the final couple of months here, like, you want guys auditioning for something, and he certainly fits into that mold.
Evan, I want to ask you just this real quick before we go into break. If, let's just say next year, would someone like, if you could find the Xavier Tillman of the 2021 draft class, and you could get that via second round pick, would that be something where you'd think that's worth it for the Cavs to maybe look for that in a future draft? I'm just curious. I just want a yes or no answer.
Yeah, I think so. And if not, high school players will be eligible soon. So I think that's another player to take stabs with of those second rounders. So you did, like I said, 4 second round picks in cash for KPJ was an option, but you could also take a stab like at a Xavier Tillman, like you said, or high schoolers down the line with that 2027 pick, because I will be 35 when that pick is available. So let's just put it that way.
Yeah, be very old. All right, BetOnline, though, is one of the sponsors on today's podcast, and they're the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds, props, and almost anything you can imagine. I'm sure they'll have some Bachelorette Paradox odds for my guy Evan over there. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to their website or use your mobile device today to sign up and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit using promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Pete Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts, probably the same place you find Locked On Cavs.
All right, guys, let's talk about Andre Drummond. So, Ben, Evan and I have talked about this ad nauseum. Like, we've talked about this a lot. This is where this was always headed. I think this is fine. There are things I think you can kill Kobe Altman and the Cavs for. this to me and how the Drummond thing played out isn't really one of them. I think you're nitpicking a little too much. If this is something that like you're like this is on the reasons why Kobe is bad as a GM or whatever, like this is not a reason I would really say. What do you make of the Drummond era and where we're ultimately going with him?
Yeah, you know, I mentioned process over results earlier, and I don't know if this necessarily fits in that category because, you know, I think you look at it and I guess looking at the results of it, like it was a bad result. Like it was not a good outcome for the Cavs to have Andre Drummond on their roster. I understand what they were going for. But at the end of the day, like didn't get much from him in terms of, you know, this is a guy who played, I think, 33 games total over the course of two seasons with the team. Only 8 games last season, obviously, because it was shortened due to COVID. And then you wind up sitting him for a month. And really, even the month before the Cavs sat him, that was not a good environment with him around. Not a good, you know, we saw what we saw on the court, basically, is what I'm trying to say. But, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think, like, this caused, like, irreparable harm to the team. Like, I don't think this is something that, you know, you gave up 2 expiring contracts. I think maybe a second-round pick, too. When they acquired him from Detroit, but this was not something where you, like, you depleted some assets or something where I think at the end of the day, if you want to look though at what was bad about it, there was some opportunity cost with him. I think it did delay a little bit, you know, just getting Jarrett Allen into the swing of things. But big picture, like, you know, it was really what, 1 bad month of Andre Drummond, and that's what you had to put up with and the quote unquote circus surrounding this past month. But yeah, I mean, I agree. This is where this was always heading once the Cavs decided that you know, he was not going to be a part of their long-term future.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think the biggest indicator of him not being a part of the long-term future, because let's not forget, Kobe Altman said he was having conversations with Drummond in his camp. I asked him actually about it in the preseason. He's like, yeah, we've had conversations, but we're still trying to figure out where the next steps are for both of us. And it seemed like a positive response. I mean, that's Kobe Altman's MO in general, though. It's just overwhelmingly positive about everything. But he seemed positive in the fact that maybe Dre would agree to an extension. And I think that was the biggest worry amongst Cavs fans and then folks who cover the team as well, because on paper, yeah, Drummond makes some sense, but like on court and in execution, it doesn't work. But then Jared Allen just kind of fell into the Cavs' laps and it changed everything, especially when Kobe made it abundantly clear again that Jared is in the long-term plans and is in future for this team. So yeah, it was just inevitable at this point. I think, and from what I've heard, the $29 million, or nearly $29 million he's making this year is just the biggest hang-up for a lot of teams. Like, it's hard to justify unless you got a third team involved, and even that's murky. Like, maybe Cleveland could have gotten in on the Kyle Lowry trade and sent Andre up to Toronto, or to Tampa, technically, and then Kyle to Miami, and then the Cavs get some beneficiaries from that. And I think that just kind of fell apart because Toronto's asking price for Kyle Lowry was so high. So, like Chris said, this just kind of felt inevitable. It's unfortunate the Cavs weren't able to move him, but they have their guy, the future, in Jared Allen. They're able to flip JaVale McGee for some assets, so there's some silver linings here. Is it disappointing? Yeah, it always is, especially when it's a guy you tell to go home and you pay to stay, well, ride on, hang out on the bench when they're at home. But other than that, it is what it is. I wish Andre the best. It was a home run swing. It was a bit of a swing and a miss. Maybe it was like a in the park double or something instead of just short of a home run or something. But either way, it was a worthy swing for the Cavs. Didn't work out, and then they just move on, and I think both sides would be better for it.
So here's the thing that I don't think we can know until Kobe says something about it, until JB says something about it. I just, like, want to know, like, the thought process on sort of, like, why Drummond. Like, so I understand you got him really cheap, but it's like they didn't just bring him in, and I understand there's some injuries to Kevin, and like Larry's not a super willing offensive three-point shooter, whatever. Like, you have young guards. Like, there's all these factors that you can sort of like cover this up with and brush it away. But no team in the history of Andre Drummond's career ever gave him more of a role on offense than Cleveland did this year at a career high usage rate. They had a whole game in Minnesota where like the Wolves didn't have any centers, and the Cavs were like, okay, we are just going to post up Andre Drummond as many times as we can, and that's going to be our offensive plan. There's no, like, argument, whether it's, like, I think film or it's the numbers on his efficiency or anything, where you can argue, like, that is, like, a really good way to use Andre Drummond. I think they got a lot out of him pre the Allen trade, but I don't think it always, like, aged that well from there. And that's a problem, I think, if you're the Cavs. Like, I just want to know philosophically, like, what the plan and really thought was with Drummond, because I don't feel like we understand that. I don't feel like we understand what they thought he could do for them. You know what? Like, Evan, I know they're going to say, like, oh, he helps the young guards, and that they've given that lip service.
That's the lip service Kobe gave us, as he helps the young guards, helps his team grow.
I don't think there's actually, like, an argument that is true, is my point. And especially with how you used him, if it's just posting him up or giving him shots in the high post or in the mid-low post, like, these are not things that are actually, like, empowering your young guards. I think Jared Allen as a lob threat is much more empowering. I just don't really buy some of the lip service we've gotten, and I sort of wonder still what the idea was with Drummond, aside from, like, give him more touches than he's ever had in his life.
Well, I think, too, you looking back to a year ago, or I guess now 13 months ago when the Cavs made this trade, like, you talk about, you know, the thing was, and I probably wrote this, I think I did write this, it's like there's no downside to it. But what was the upside? Like, what did, like, if this played out in its best version of itself, what does that look like? Does that look like flipping Andre for a big haul at this trade deadline? Does that look like signing him to a long-term extension? Like, it's just hard to, like, you know, I know, Chris, you've talked a lot about the ethos of the Cavs, and I had to sit there, and I was at the press conferences after they acquired Andre Drummond, where they're talking about, like, you know, basically everybody's going small, we're going to go big with Andre Drummond and Kevin Love, and it's like, what? Like, that doesn't help in terms of developing that ethos and developing, like, your vision. And yeah, I guess that's why I struggle with saying this falls into the process over results thing, because I just don't think there was much of a vision beyond, hey, we're getting this really good player on the cheap, when really he didn't fit into anything you were trying to build.
And 48 minutes of elite center play is an all-time hilarious quote.
Oh, it really is. Never apologize for it, though. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, never going to apologize for 48 minutes of elite center play. And then literally a game later, Andre Drummond is, like, actively, like, not trying as hard on the court. Wild times. But Evan, if Andre Drummond had, like, you know, when he gears up for a playoff run, you know what could help him do that?
Our friends at Built Bar sure can.
Absolutely. So our friends at Built Bar obviously are in the midst of their Built Bar madness. Built Bar, if you don't know, is the best tasting protein bar ever. It has every bar covered in 100% chocolate, soft and easy to chew, great protein numbers. Nothing really not to like about Built Bar. And Evan, today's matchup in the Built Bar madness bracket is mint brownie versus the coconut chocolate puff. Now, excuse me, coconut marshmallow puff, I apologize. But I think mint brownie's rolling over here. They're Gonzaga in the tournament, just rolling over fools in my mind.
I called them OU initially, but they are definitely the Gonzaga of the tournament now. Well, actually, no, that's not true. I think cookie dough or cookies and cream might be the Gonzaga of this tournament, but mint brownie, they're the Loyola of this bracket. Like, I love them dearly. I'm rooting for them. I hope they do well.
If you want to do, like, the win, maybe they're like the Louisville, like, they have to, like, have a comeback against another good team to kind of keep going on. But really good bar. Just built. I think this is a mint brownie matchup all the way.
It's built for deliciousness. I'll say that.
It's minted, so to speak. Go to builtbar.com or to built_bar on Twitter to follow along. And remember, use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. That is LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order at builtbar.com. And check back to see who won today's matchup and who will become the best tasting protein bar. Guys, last segment here. I just want to ask you, anything with the Cavs, like, you would have liked to see them do? Any final feelings about this deadline? Like, where are you guys at with where this team sort of is now that the deadline is done and this roster is what it is for now?
Yeah, I mean, this is largely what I was expecting. I didn't think they were going to find a Drummond trade. You know, I think flipping JaVale in lieu of that was, you know, probably even bigger of a deal. I think probably would have liked to see them trade either Jetty or Torian Prince, but I didn't expect them to get a haul back for either one of them. I was saying before we came on here, with the Cavs, you never know. I mean, the Drummond trade a year ago when the Cavs got him came out of left field, so there was always the chance the Cavs could get involved in some crazy deal. And even, you know, getting Jared Allen a couple of months ago, you know, we didn't really hear rumblings of that until it actually happened. So there was always a chance the Cavs could come out of left field with something here. But this is largely what I was expecting was, you know, a couple of second round picks and moving on from one of the veterans.
Yeah, that's what I kind of felt too. I was maybe expecting Damian Dotson to get a little interest at the deadline too. I know his off the court concerns considered, of course, but just on the court, like, he produces as a volume scorer, volume shooter. He could be a nice end of bench piece. That's what I always kind of felt about Dot. I'm surprised, well, no, not really surprised the Jetty deal fell apart. I know Golden State was really interested in him, but like Wes Goldberg kind of shared with us, I did a little bit of fact checking behind the scenes. If the Golden State was going to give up Kelly Oubre, they wanted to get at least a first-round pick in return because they gave up a first-round pick to get Kelly Oubre, and Cleveland wasn't going to give up a first-round pick for a rental on Kelly Oubre. So that's why the trade fell apart in itself. Like, I think Jetty might be a draft move. I think maybe he could be packaged with second-rounders, or maybe Cleveland offloads Kevin Love or somebody else to get some first, and they try to move up in the draft to kind of dip their feet in the pool a few more times with this talented class. But I think Jetty will be a draft move. Taurean as well, especially because he'll be expiring next year, and I think a lot of teams will be interested with him because of what he is hypothetically and then just contract-wise. I know he's making a decent amount, but I was talking to Ben about this before you hopped on with us, Chris. I'm just like, it was a quiet deadline for the Cavs, but you really have to look at the entire scope of the season for trades, like the biggest one being the Jared Allen one, an unfortunate one being the Kevin Porter one, and then the JaVale McGee trade was just a good trade overall for Cleveland, and they have to walk away somewhat happy from this. Like, none of the young guys were touched, they never were going to be touched, and we'll just kind of look forward to what's ahead for them.
Here's what I think ultimately I feel like is maybe one of the more interesting parts of this, is that the Cavs, by all indications, were not willing to take back any like kind of bad money for Drummond. That was every deal sort of out there, was that they were going to take back some kind of bad money to facilitate that contract, that kind of deal with Andre Drummond. I think very clearly, them now having some cap space, I haven't gone and like looked at the numbers, but they're going to have some a little bit of money to spend in the offseason. I don't expect them to go out and like break the bank for one big guy. But I think if you're leaving cap space open for yourself as a team, I think you very clearly, unless you're just deciding to be cheap, which I don't really think that's true. I think you're looking at this as a chance, okay, like maybe we can add some pieces, upgrade some spots via free agency. And because I think when you go into next year, it's still an open question on how many spots on the team are sort of like untouchable. Like, right, like I was listening to like a bunch of NFL free agency podcasts, and it's like the Browns were like, okay, like on defense, if you're building this defense, Myles Garrett and Denzel Ward are the two pieces on the board you know are good. Everything else, Go ahead, do whatever you want. With Cleveland, like, how many pieces are there really that you're like, yes, like, this is a locked-in piece for us? Like, yes, you're going to allocate, a lot of that money is going to be allocated to Jared Allen, I think, like, 15, somewhere in the 15 to 20 range, let's just say. And then, you know, you'll have to budget in for, like, a Colin Sexton extension that's going to, he'll be eligible for. Darius Garland's not that far off. You know, Nance only has, like, you're going to start planning a couple years out in the future for this. But is there a move with whatever money you have left that is smart, will help your team? Is there a shooter, a shooting wing you can go back out and get that you're willing to maybe overpay a little bit for to bring in? Is there something you can do in that regard? Or is it a trade ultimately in the summer if you can't do anything in free agency? If you're like, okay, we know what the draft, like, free agency is not going to work for us. Is there a deal now we can take where we can get a player that can fit us right now, but we get some extra value back? Because like, I think it gives you flexibility that I really like, as opposed to taking on like 2-3 years of bad money just to get something right now. I think I'm good with the patience in that sense. I think that to me, as in addition to like the overall scope of this, like, yes, you got Jared Allen, who's 5 years younger and everything, and he's a better long-term play. You got all these second-round picks. I think that's clearly more of a long-term play. But I think not rushing into a deal now and then keeping all this stuff here for the summer, I think ultimately is kind of smart, and I think kind of more illustrated than anything we've ever heard the team say about itself in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I agree with that. And to me, you know, that's why I always thought trading Drummond just wasn't going to happen, is because that would be compounding, you know, one mistake into two mistakes. To turn his salary into just more long-term salary, you're better off just letting it fall off the books at that point. So that's pretty much what's going to happen with the Cavs here. And, you know, that's looking back now. I think it's going to be interesting now to see where Andre Drummond lands, because he certainly, it seems like, going to factor in pretty big into this upcoming NBA playoffs.
Lakers. I'm seems like Lakers.
It. Yeah. If I had to put money on it, I'd put the Lakers for sure. Brooklyn, like a 5% chance, maybe, if he has a change of heart. But I think
it's, I mean, because it seems like that's going to be the best role for him heading into free agency.
Oh yeah, that's. I know the Nuggets made a lot of power moves at the deadline, but let's say LeBron comes back a little earlier than expected. LeBron's not human. Let's say Anthony Davis is willing to gamble his calf injury and, knock on wood, it doesn't turn into an Achilles injury. Like, I've said this to Chris, I've said it to a few people who cover the Pistons as well. Andre Drummond has never had a ball handler like LeBron James to facilitate an offense for him. And I know J.R. Smith was a knucklehead when he came to Cleveland, but LeBron set him straight right away. And I think Drummond being bought out and having the sense of urgency that this is his last chance to get a big contract, and coupled with the fact that LeBron is probably going to do whatever he can to make him feel welcome and maximize him, it just makes more and more sense. Like, James Harden, yeah, he would make him pretty good too, but I just wonder about the clunkiness of some of the personalities in that locker room too, because LeBron's a lot more inclusive of a player, where Kevin Durant, Kyrie, James Harden are buddies, and then it feels a lot like Jimmy Butler and Rajon Rondo in Chicago a few years ago versus what the Lakers have now.
Three alphas, baby. Three alphas. The Chicago Bulls of Butler, Wade, and Rondo. You love to see it. Guys, we'll wrap up on this. Just give me a move you either liked or didn't like on the deadline. What's something you liked or didn't like?
I don't know if I liked or didn't like it, but I'm intrigued by Miami getting Victor Oladipo, just because, you know, 2 years ago, that's a move that people would have thought changed the paradigm of the Eastern Conference. And now, like, Victor Oladipo is just one of those players I have no idea what to make of him after the injury and after the trade from Indiana to Houston and now going to Miami with Jimmy Butler and all of that. Like, I just think Miami is now just a really intriguing team. Obviously, they were in the Lowry sweepstakes, and it looks like they might be getting LaMarcus Aldridge too. So I'm really intrigued by what Miami did, and it looks like what Miami did.
I like Kyle Lowry staying with the Raptors because he is the Toronto Raptors. It's unfortunate that they play in Tampa because of COVID restrictions, but maybe he signs another one-year deal with Toronto if the borders do open back up this time next year, so he's able to play there again. But the move I didn't like actually does involve the Raptors. I think the Blazers paid way too much for Norm Powell. Like, I think Norm Powell's really good, but Norm Powell's also in a contract year, so I don't know if it's worth giving up Gary Trent Jr. for that.
I think it's good for Twitter that Lou Williams now plays for the Atlanta Hawks.
Yeah, it didn't take long for that joke to get made.
I immediately went and got a picture of Jack Harlow and Lou Williams at Magic City, and Nick Engstead, our producer on the Locked On Live show, put a picture up of the Magic City menu as they were talking about it. So, you know what? You love to see it. Happy for Lou. Ben, I on the other side of the Oladipo deal, I hate it for Houston. Yeah. I don't understand what the point of it is. They're getting a pick swap for next year. They're not going to be better than Miami. Like, that, they're not going to get a pick out of that unless there's, like, a set. Like, they don't swap it. Do they get, like, a second? I don't know. And you're getting two expiring contracts of players that don't matter to them. I just don't quite understand what the point of that was unless you're trying to do right by
Depot. Yeah, I mean, when you play out the string of the James Harden trade now, like, how Houston didn't wind up being the team to get Jared Allen back in that, or how, you know, what they wound up doing with Oladipo, like, that is not like a...
How do they not just get Caris LeVert? Just take Caris, unless they just don't think he's good. Like, I get like the Allen thing. It's like, okay, like, we have Christian Wood. Okay.
Because,
like,
gift cards to Tillman Fertitta's restaurants aren't acceptable forms of payment in today's NBA. That's why.
Fun deadline, as always. It's always busy. Ben, thanks again for coming on. Was this more fun for you than the NFL trade deadline?
NFL trade deadline, yeah. This was always more fun than the NFL trade deadline. We've got to go back, though, and revisit our when we drafted the NBA playoff teams. I think I might have made some good picks.
We definitely will.
All right, we will have you the next time you're on. I'm going to go back and tally this, and we're going to come back on, and hopefully we can roast
it. Let's do it right before the playoffs.
I'm in.
My Bulls pick doesn't feel as good. Or I don't know if I took the Bulls, but either way, I'm okay. At least I'm not with Chris and the Hornets, who stole them from me.
Look, the Bulls just got Vooch, though. They're going to make the playoffs for sure.
He has an 8 seed. I guess you get that one.
Give me a real middle class of teams. I want teams that are just competent and kind of fun and frisky. We don't need to be boom or bust.
Maybe that's the headline for the Cavs at this trade deadline, is that they force Chicago to make some moves to get into that middle class.
Isaac Okoro locked down LaVine and shook the Bulls. Shook them. Broderick Thomas dunked on their heads.
The end of the Wendell Carter Jr. era.
Wendell Carter yelled O-S-H-I-T like when he missed a layup in that game. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable stuff from Wendell Carter. Oh, my goodness. All right, thanks again, everyone, for tuning in. Find Ben on Twitter at Ben Axelrod. Evan's on Twitter, @MNEvan. I'm at T.D. Ben Writes at Locked On Cavs, wherever you find podcasts. Thanks again for listening. We will talk to you all either Monday or after one of these games this weekend. We haven't figured that out yet, but we'll talk to you here very soon. Locked On Cavs is your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast covering the latest news, rumors, and game action from the Wine and Gold.
You can follow us on social at Locked On Cavs or give us a call and leave a voicemail, and we'll answer your questions live at 440-673-3605.
If you want to contact the show, email us at lockedoncavs@gmail.com. And if you want to support the show, the best way to do that is by going to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It's produced and hosted by Chris Manning and Evan Damrell.